Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mark Saffer to the broadcast. Mark is the Chief Information Officer of J.Crew, a role he's held for 3.5 years. During that time, he's played an integral role in transforming J.Crew's technology and helping to improve the organization's e-commerce operation. J.Crew is the fourth company that Mark has served as CIO, having held that role at Duane Reade, Columbia House, and Footstar Corporation. He also was a vice president of IT at Macy's, and he can still be seen every Thanksgiving morning, piloting a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I recently caught up with Mark in his office on Broadway in New York City, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed the methods he used to build and reshape the IT team that he found at J.Crew upon joining. Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed some of the technology changes that he enacted. Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed the methods Mark used to develop his initial portfolio projects. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnership, as we discussed his early conversations with his colleagues as he looks to set a strategy for IT, as well as a variety of other topics. Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Saffer, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter. Nice to be here. Appreciate you inviting me.
I wonder if you could start with your position. J.Crew is a brand that I imagine is going to be very front of mind or a brand that people are knowledgeable who are listening to this. But maybe you can talk a bit about what the Chief Information Officer role at J.Crew entails.
Sure, happy to. So J.Crew, most people know the brand. Most people are pretty surprised that the business isn't quite as big as the brand is. We're just a little over a $2 billion business, privately held. And we're looking to grow into our brand. Obviously, CIO, I'm responsible for all the technology. It's, more interesting here at J.Crew because a huge part of our business is direct-to-consumer. It's heavily reliant on technology. And, the technology is ever-changing. Our consumer requirements are changing, how customers want to interact with us. So it's a pretty exciting place to be. We're growing internationally. We're growing the business domestically. We're adding formats. We're growing our second brand, which is Madewell, and we're an always on push to do better online, make the customer experience better online, improve the way we interact with our customers, and of course do that the way the customer wants to, whether that's on a PC, on a tablet, on mobile, at home, away from home. It's a never-ending quest to do better for our customers.
Just as you say, Mark, one of the things that's surprising about J.Crew is how small it is, relatively speaking, given how big the brand is. And part of that is the fact that for a while it's been heavily involved in digital business, whether that's catalog and phone-based, increasingly e-commerce by the web. Can you talk a bit about how the IT department gets involved in those sorts of things, your touch points or interactions with the digital business at large?
We spend a lot of time working with the people who run the direct-to-consumer business. We don't call it digital. Mm-hmm. We're still a little bit of an old-school cataloger. We refer to the whole business as direct. And direct is really run, the marketing team is responsible for the catalog. We call it a style guide. It's a great monthly periodical. It comes out. It looks beautiful. People love to get it. It feels good to have and look through and understand what the rest of the world is going to be looking like. And then we have to translate that to online. And it's got to look the same. It's got to feel the same. It's got to have the same aesthetic around it. And a lot of that is how we translate the design, the creative portion, into an online experience. And that's done, we're in an agile methodology. We spend a lot of time one-on-one, groups, small groups with the business, and they lead us through every single step of the way.
That's great. I wanted to talk a bit about how you organize yourself in the early stages of your time at J.Crew. Now, you have a long history in retail. You've been a CIO multiple times, most recently at Duane Reade prior to joining J.Crew, not long after the acquisition by Walgreens. And I wonder, how did you go about the early stages prior to actually joining? How did you go about preparing yourself for the role here at J.Crew?
That's a good question. It was a little bit easier because the interview process here at J.Crew is rather lengthy, even for any employee, and especially for a C-level employee. I actually was working with the management team here over a year before I started during the interview process. So that gave me a lot of insight. Just the fact that it was a year plus long interview process tells me that J.Crew takes personnel matters very, very seriously. And that permeates its way through all of the company. Just how we act is all very personal and very people related. It's about product, it's about people, it's about customer service. And so that says a lot about a company. So a lot of what I needed to know, I learned during the interview process. I probably spoke to 20 different people, including board members, before they hired me. And then during that time, it also gave me a great opportunity to talk to other people who were familiar with J.Crew. I was able to talk to a couple of vendors that were also my vendors at Duane Reade. When it got close to the time that I was going to leave Duane Reade, it was easy for me to reach out and say, hey, I know you're doing business with J.Crew. How bad is it there? How good is it there? What's going on there? And then my boss, future boss at J.Crew at the time, who's still my boss today, suggested that I probably wanted to take a few extra weeks off in between. And that gave me a great opportunity. I actually took a month off between Duane Reade and J.Crew, aside from clearing my mind and knowing I had a job waiting for me when I got back from vacation. I was able to reach out to a few contacts, people who had done recruiting for J.Crew, people who were former employees of J.Crew, really got a good feel for, you know, what's the culture like? What is it like dealing with basically the merchant prince who runs J.Crew, Mickey Drexler? What is it like working in an organization like that? Even though I've been in retail for the bulk of my career, bringing industry knowledge is good, but sometimes it could work against you because it's easy for me to think that, well, it's the same template that worked here, that worked in other retailers. And while, yes, some of that might be true, it's very easy to overstep your bounds and assume things work a certain way because that's how it worked three other companies. Not every company is the same. And you know, especially when you're first starting, you want to make a bit of a splash, but you don't want to drown yourself either. And you don't want to be a bull in a china shop. You have to do more listening than talking. You have to be observant. You've got to listen to what everybody says, but you have to understand where they're coming from. Not everybody speaks the full truth, not because they don't want to, because that's the world as they see it. And especially, you know, whether you're talking to peers, whether you're talking to other people around the business, whether I'm talking to my team members, whether I'm talking to vendors, I want to hear what they have to say, but I need to put that in the context of how are they seeing it. What do they have to gain from it? Sitting down with an employee for the first time, if it's a direct report, tell me about yourself, tell me about your team. Chances are they're going to leave out the bad parts. Chances are they're going to try to position themselves, not necessarily where they are today, but where they want to be. And that's okay, but again, you have to weigh what people are saying with why they might be saying it and where they're coming from.
That's really interesting. I like that you talk about so much of your preparation as being cultural and people-centric, because obviously that's going to dictate so much. I think a lot of CIOs get caught up in focusing exclusively on the technology or perhaps too much on the technology, recognizing the people elements are essential. And as you point out, your past experiences only translate so much. You need to understand the new environment that you're joining and what makes it tick and whether or not you're somebody who can make it tick a little faster or not. Sticking with the people point, I wonder in those early days, how did you go about the process? And you've begun to allude to this as you had these conversations with your team and begin to decipher how they worked and how they saw themselves and perhaps to some extent where they saw themselves going. How did you go about that assessment process to understand who are the long-term players, who's in the right chairs today, where you might need some outside help and that sort of thing?
One of the things that I've learned over time is people matters are the most important. And they're usually the ones that aren't always what they seem initially. So sometimes you start and your first impression of somebody might be very, very good. They might seem very smart. They might seem well connected. But I think it takes weeks, sometimes months, to understand a full 360 view of somebody. How do they really fit into the organization? What are they really contributing? What's really the truth about them? Are people saying nice things about them because they mean it? Or are they saying nice things about somebody because they're afraid that if they don't, something bad might happen to them. At times, I think it's better to move a little more slowly with people changes than quickly, because it's very easy to make a bad first read, especially when you're a new boss coming into a new group. And in J.Crew, it happened to be at a time when the IT group was somewhat troubled. I find that I'm always brought into a company that's having trouble. Usually, if the company's doing really well in IT, the incumbent never left in the first place.
Right.
And so many of the times I've come into a new CIO assignment, it's because there are a list of problems. Whether they're problems that are real problems, or they're structural problems, or they're just perceptions on the part of the business, it almost doesn't matter. And I think it's important to talk to people outside of IT, whether it's HR, merchandising, marketing, operations, and again, listening to what are their perception of what's going on. What's wrong with IT? What's broken? What do we need to fix? And I think in the cases where I've come into a new role, there tend to be a handful of themes. Many of those themes are, you know, IT's not delivering. IT's not responsive. Systems are unstable. Those tend to be recurring things, but they're different by company. The one way, I think, to make a big difference is focus on one or two of the things that you're hearing pervasively through the organization about IT that's a negative. You know, if you can concentrate on one or two, maybe three things, you know, at J.Crew, a lot of it was around stability, transparency, and what IT was not accomplishing. There's a lot of complaints about we're spending a lot of money on technology, but we're not getting anything for it. You know, obviously these are perceptions. And, you know, when people perceive IT that way, it tends to bode very poorly for the motivation of the team that you're taking over. So they've been beaten up for months, sometimes years, by a user population that feels they're inadequate, that they're not doing their jobs. And so, as you can imagine, you know, you come in and people aren't exactly working in the most positive environment. Part of it is understanding, you know, what are the negative perceptions, true or not true? What are the simplest ways to start fixing them? Oftentimes, it's just delivering something small that's a bit visible that can be successful. Focusing on that, because you're not going to start off week two in a job and deliver the three-year project that never got delivered. And that's not going to happen. But you can put points on the board. You can put some small wins up. And the process of doing that shows which of your employees can actually make that turn. Part of it, again, you have to come in and make people believe it's different now. Mm-hmm. What used to be, used to be. There's somebody new running IT now. We're all in it together, but we've got to make this a great environment to work in. We've got to change what it's like to work in IT. What do we want it to be? How do we visualize that? How do we create that shared vision around all the people in IT? And as we're doing that, I think it takes maybe a month or two before people really start showing their true colors. Who can change the way they think? Who can step up and be a real leader? Who can embody the kind of change we want to see in the organization? Who can deliver on a small project in a short period of time? And it's then you can start really making good decisions about who's an ongoing employee and who needs to leave. And I think it's a process, and it's fallible. Look, I'm not going to say I got it 100% right, but I can tell you, I've been at J.Crew now just a little over three years, and the team I put together 2.5 years ago has been, luckily, pretty stable. We haven't lost any of my direct reports in 2.5 years. As I look back, I think that I probably could have taken some personnel action sooner. I think I waited probably 6 months into my tenure to make a couple of big moves. And I knew those moves 2 months in, but I chose to be a little more cautious. Looking back, I probably shouldn't have been quite as cautious.
That's very interesting. But I like your, in some ways, cuts against the grain, not being so decisive so early so that you have a chance to really kind of be more confident in the decisions that you're making relative to personnel, since, you know, they're essential to your own success. You're only going to be as good as the team that you put together.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also like this idea of putting together the quick wins. Your description, which seems so logical, that, you know, if there's the three-year project that has not been successful in the past, that to make that the number one for you to do in the relatively near term is going to be a fool's errand. But if you can get some things on the board, then it builds momentum for your team, as well as being a good testing ground to prove who's in and who's out.
Exactly.
And so how did you go about identifying those quick wins, what those might be, what pain points you might address for people outside of IT, your various constituent groups within the company? What was that process like?
A part of it is getting out and talking to people. Mm-hmm. It's especially important to talk to the people that work with IT on a very regular basis. It's also very important to talk to people at all levels in IT. I mean, I was meeting, walking around, I was very visible, stopping people in the hallway. Hey, what's going on? How are you doing? what do we do that's stupid here? What are some of the things that we do that's absolutely ridiculous? And you learn a lot. And again, one of the things I've seen is if you stop and talk to 10 or 20 rank and file IT people, they'll come up with a few themes. You'll see the same things come up over and over again. We spend too much time in meetings. We're not getting clear direction. We're not involved with the business as well as we should be. And you start to put together some of those themes and, you know, how do we fix those themes? How do we turn those things around? Some of it's working with my direct reports, my leadership team. Some of it's working with the business. Some of it's going to HR and getting some advice. You know, I got a lot of advice. You know, there's no shortage of advice when you first come on board. J.Crew had a great onboarding process. I had a list of meetings, all different people across the organization at different levels. And I got a lot of good advice. And I got a lot of crappy advice. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people told me, you're coming into a new organization, first month, fire somebody, show you're the boss, go in there and own it. I don't subscribe to that theory because the last thing I think you want to do when you come into a new job is strike fear in people's hearts. Fear is probably the worst long-term motivator there is. And my goal is when I come in is to make people feel comfortable. I want people to understand that, you know, we're going to create a world-class IT organization. We're going to build the kind of team that you're going to want to work on. Sit back. If you're doing your job, if you're good at what you do, we want you to be part of the team going forward. If you're not good at what you want to do, what you're doing, if you're in the wrong position, let's figure out what the right position is, or let's move you in a way that's going to work out both for you and for the company. The last thing I want to do is get people afraid that, oh, if I don't perform, I'm going to get kicked out. People make their worst decisions when they're afraid. When people feel comfortable, when people feel motivated, when people are excited about where they are, they will step up and do way more than you ever thought they could do. And I think that's been my experience starting a couple of new CIO gigs, especially here at J.Crew. People were afraid. People didn't know who I was. People didn't know who the new boss was. People were uncomfortable in the existing environment because of the bad reputation IT had in J.Crew. And I think it took them a month to realize that I really was going to try and build a good organization. I really wasn't trying to just cycle people out. And again, you can't gain people's trust. You can't gain motivation. You can't get people on your team in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yep. These things take 4, 5, 6 weeks. And something needs to happen where they see you stand up, where they see you do something right in a visible situation. Whether that's defending somebody, whether that's going to bat for somebody, whether that's not firing somebody when you could have. Mm-hmm. Word of that spreads pretty quickly. Yep. And it creates an environment where people feel positive about where they are. People feel positive about the job. Everyone felt positive about the company, J.Crew. People weren't sure generally about whether the IT organization, J.Crew, was going to turn into something positive or continue on a kind of semi-destructive course.
Interesting. I want to talk about, you mentioned that one of the issues that was brought to your attention was a stability issue. And that speaks to the technology that you're managing and how well it's managed, et cetera. What were some of the things that you did to attack that issue? Was it a question of adding new technologies, bolstering the capabilities, bringing in new vendor partners? How did you sort through that?
I think there were a variety of different things that mm-hmm. happened. I'll give you one specific example. Like most organizations, we're very reliant on email. I mean, email is probably one of the top three technologies that we run, probably after the internet and the call center. Mm-hmm. We had some severe stability issues. When we talked to the technology team, it seems that we hadn't invested in our email infrastructure in years. It was very common that email would be delivered for some time, that the email system would go down for hours at a time, and we were relying on reports coming through email, where all of our communication was done through email. And so it's not something you're going to do in the first 90 days to totally replatform email. You know, we were running an old version of Exchange. Our mail stores were way too big because nobody wanted to archive email. So I wasn't going to embark on a brand new, what's long-term project to replace email at J.Crew. But what I was able to do is put together a little tiger team of technology people and say, what are the big issues here? What's causing us to go down? What's wrong? How do we put, again, quick wins and show the rest of the organization that when we put our mind to it, we can stabilize the system, even if it's only in the short term, and then we can put together a 1 or a 2 year plan to fully fix it. So we looked at it, we realized our mail stores were way too big, we didn't have the right amount of hosting, We brought in a couple of VMware servers, built up 12 email stores where there were three, spread the load. In 2 months, 2.5 months, we had a stable email platform. It wasn't world class. It wasn't the latest version of Exchange, but darn it if it didn't work every day. Mm-hmm. And that and one or two other things that we did showed the rest of the organization that we meant business, that we could get things on track, we could stabilize systems, we could actually deliver. And the rest of the organization felt like, yeah, hey, we can deliver. And when we do deliver, the organization actually feels good about it.
That's great. Another theme you mentioned was transparency. I hope I'm translating it correctly. Let me know if I'm not. But that IT was kind of operating in a black box of sorts previously that the rest of the organization didn't fully understand. And I would imagine that step one in that transparency is what the point you've alluded to multiple times now of getting out of your office, of meeting with people outside of IT, of listening to them. Where have we succeeded? Where have we failed? What are your priorities? What are your pain points? That certainly starts the process of becoming more transparent. What other steps did you take in order to make sure that people understood your priorities, your imperatives, your process as you went through this journey in the early stages?
I think it was less of what's my process and more of what's the right thing for J.Crew to do. Okay. I didn't come in with a formula. I didn't come in with a template. And as a matter of fact, even when I saw things should be done differently, I wasn't going to kind of push my will on everybody else. I think it's important that people own the ideas that we work with. And if I've got a new concept, I'm going to float that through the team. Maybe not everybody in the team. Maybe it's just my leadership team. Maybe it's the next level down. How do we fix this? How do we make this better? What's the better process? What's the fix? And get kind of a group consensus. Not that I'm going to spend all day trying to get consensus. At some point in time, you know, you have to pull rank and say, look, we all, eight out of 10 agree on this. This is the way we're going. I think the transparency piece wasn't exactly about IT being quote-unquote a black box, but it just felt like IT was speaking a different language in the business.
I see.
And I think one of the most important things as a CIO you can do is talk in a very plain, easy-to-understand way about technology. Once you start using abbreviations and talking in alphabet soup, you may think it makes you sound smart, but I'd rather my business people think they're smarter than me and be a better partner with me than feel like, you know, I'm so technical and so smart that they can't even talk to me and they feel put off. That's not a way to build partnerships with business. So a lot of it was spending time, not just one-on-one. I'd bring two or three of my direct reports, sit down with a couple of business owners and say, hey, you know, what are some of the biggest issues? What are you seeing? And here are the things we're working on. Which of these things are the most important? Prioritize this list for us and let us start hitting things that are going to make a difference in the way you work and the way your team operates. How do we do things that are the most valuable for you? And eventually we put in a different governance model. We created a model where there is we call it an investment management team. It's the senior people of the company that basically prioritize projects for us. We have quarterly steering committee meetings and we opened up the steering committee. Steering committee now is 18 people. So we're trying to get out that we put an IT newsletter together. It's online, it's not paper, but we're trying to get people to understand, here's what's happening in IT. And by the way, IT's door is always open. Come visit us, come in and see, come talk to us. We're not up in an ivory tower somewhere. We're as much a part of the business as anybody else is, and we welcome interaction. And that was, quite honestly, that was a sentiment that didn't exist before I got here. Give us specs, we'll show you what
right.
we got.
Right, right. That's great. Were there ways in which you measured success and have continued to, for that matter? How do you communicate internally and externally the extent to which you do, how IT is doing? What kind of things were you looking to improve or reduce or increase, as the case may be?
While metrics are very important, and you know we have availability metrics, we have budgets, we have delivery, you know, when I think about IT, I mean, there's two real major components to IT, and you could probably break it up even further, but you know, there's the utility component of IT, got to keep systems running, the website's got to be up, email's got to be up, and so that's very easily measured, and that's measured in terms of system uptime stability. Then there's the whole second part of IT, which is really moving the business forward. It's all the projects we deliver, it's all the things that we do that are not day in and day out. These are things that kind of add value to the business. And so the way to measure those is, did they add the value that they were supposed to? I mean, every time we finish a project, we usually, between 4 and 10 weeks later, do we call it a postmortem? Hopefully nobody died, but it's a post-project review of, and while it's important to say, did we do it on time? Did we do it on budget? Those things are really secondary to, did it achieve the business results it was supposed to? If the new checkout on the website was supposed to increase conversion 20 basis points, are we seeing that now? That's the better measure of success. But even metrics aside, I think the best measure of success is going to the business leaders outside of IT and saying, how do you perceive the IT organization today, especially compared to how you envisioned it months ago? And that really is what's telling, because it's technology is always a people business. I can walk around with the best 99.999 availability metrics. If people are unhappy with what IT is delivering, it doesn't mean a blessed thing. It's really all about the business perception of, is IT a good partner? Is IT spending their money wisely? Is IT delivering value to the business? If those things aren't true, nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm. Great points. I love the fact that you focus so much on traditional IT metrics as being foundational, and then building upon that the metrics that the rest of the organization holds dear. Did you deliver value at the end of the day as a means of kind of building that bridge between what IT does and what the rest of the organization does? That's great. I wanted to also ask you a bit about the future. What are some of the priorities now sitting where you are today, a few years into this role? What are some of the things that are kind of rising to the top of the list of your priorities as you look forward?
Obviously, some things never change. It's about value for the business. So, you know, we're privately held right now. Our owners in the next probably 2 or 3 years are going to want to monetize their investment. And that means we've got to build the business up to the point where it's worth a lot more than what they paid for it. So some of the things we're working on, and all of the things that for the most part that we're working on, are aligned with where the business needs to go. We're opening stores internationally. We're building our e-commerce business internationally. We're continuing to open stores here in the U.S., and we're continuing to improve our online experience and our overall customer experience. So all of our big projects are really around fulfilling the needs of where the company's growth's got to go. We call it the value creation plan. It's how do we create value for our owners, how do we create value for ourselves, and how do we make J. Crew a more valuable asset. So the biggest projects this year, I just said, international. It's all about localizing the website for the markets that we're moving into. It's being able to support the stores that we're opening this year. It's the UK. Next year will be Asia. We need to make sure that the experience that we deliver in those countries is the American J.Crew experience, slightly translated for the market we're going to. It's got to look like J.Crew. It's got to feel like J.Crew. We're selling J.Crew to the UK. We're not selling them a UK version of J.Crew. Another big initiative is something we call enterprise selling, where we want to start making our inventory available across channels. If I'm in a store and I need something that exists in another store or exists online, that's got to be seamless. If I'm online and I need something that isn't in my direct warehouse, but it's in a store, that should be seamless for the customer. And that's something that we're going to be launching in October. It's a huge initiative for us. You know, we feel we're a little behind here. A lot of companies have done a great job of going cross-channel and delivering better experiences to their customers. And that's something that not only are we playing catch-up, but we kind of want to leapfrog a little bit and get ahead of it. So those are basically our big initiatives. And especially there's another initiative around customer and making sure we understand the customer as she shops across multiple channels, across multiple brands, and delivering the kind of experience that she needs. And so those are all of our big initiatives. Now, from a technology standpoint, we want to do that in the most cost-effective, in the most easy-to-manage and stable manner. So we're making sure that we're making good use of virtualization, that we're using public cloud where we can, where it makes the most sense, and we're keeping our technology footprint to a manageable size, so that we can leverage all of our people and all of our skill sets on as many different areas as possible.
That's great. I love the fact that as you talk about priorities, again, it's a seamless transition between the priorities of the greater organization and IT's role in that. Mark Saffer, thank you so much for joining us in the forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives and your wealth of knowledge from your experience at J.Crew and beyond. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for asking me, and thanks for taking the time out. I really had fun talking to you. Thanks, Peter.
Excellent.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat believes in the power of openness and shared knowledge to transform how we all do business. Learn more at redhat.com. just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.